want to move on now to day two. Day two is a very mysterious, difficult day to understand. Some of the concepts that are mentioned are esoteric in particular. And actually, that's actually a point that I want to actually make about how much we can't really understand. We're going to make that point almost immediately at the outset of the shir. But then there will be some things I think we can understand and very important questions that we can ask. So let's open up our Chumashim and turn to Pasuk Vav. Remember that at the end of the first day, Hashem has created light. Depending on how you understand the opening of the pasuk of the Chumash, He's also created something called Shemayim Va'aretz. And now we're ready to move on to day two. Yomer Elokim, and God said, Yehi Rakia B'soch Hamayim. Let there be some kind of a firmament in the midst or in between the waters. These are waters that are above what we would call Aretz. I'm not sure yet. We'll have to see if they're physical or spiritual. But there's something above. And therefore, there were some big waters, and God says, let there be a firmament to divide. And then there will be waters above that, and waters below that. Here, there's some more source sheets. Maybe we could just put them in the back. Well, there's a few more still. Want to just put these there? Yes, thank you, Barry. Take them. Thank you. So you have these waters that are being divided. Continuing on to Pasuk Zion. When I say continuing on to Zion, it's not because I assume we know what just happened in Pasuk Vav. But we still have to move on. So there are these waters, and they're being divided, upper and lower. Furthermore, this Torah says, V'yath Elokim Asarakia. So God, in fact, made this firmament. And in such and so doing, V'yavdol ben hamayim asher mitachas larakia, ben hamayim asher me'al larakia. He divided between the waters that were above this firmament and the waters that were below this firmament. V'yihi chein, and it was so. Now, what's the result of all this? Vayikra Elokim l'rakia shamayim. And this firmament itself is what is called shamayim, which means that there's something above shamayim. In case you weren't yet confused. Above shamayim is apparently something else, which is now these mayim elyonim. The rakia is shamayim. And at that point, vayir vayivoker yom sheni. So, there is a machlokas, a very interesting machlokas, which is very relevant in particular because of, I think, it drives home a point. On the one hand, it should give a source of humility to us, and at the same time, it may also make us feel better. Those aren't always mutually exclusive about ourselves. If you look at Rashi on Pasuk Vav, right, before we get to some of the things I really want to focus on in Pasuk Zion, first question is, the whole essential accomplishment of day two, says the Chumash, is that there is this firmament, this rakia, that is dividing the waters. So, most obvious question is, what does that mean? What's going on? What happened? So there seems to be a machlokas, a very basic machlokas of what's going on. If you look at Rashi, let's find it, Pasuk Vav, you're on page 4 of your art scroll, the Rashi is the second Rashi of Pasuk Vav. About 5 lines down in the Rashi on the right-hand column. B'soch Hamayim. There was this water out there, and Hashem in day 2 adds this rakia in the middle of that water, which then splits it into 2. So says Rashi, Be'emsa Hamayim, that God has put this rakia, this firmament, this dividing line, in the middle of this water. Sheyesh Hefresh Bein Mayim Elyonim L'Rakia, Kamo Bein HaRakia L'Mayim L'mayim sh'ala aretz. So now is a distinction, there is a dividing point between the waters above and below the rakia, just like kamo ben rakia l'mayim sh'ala aretz. Just like there's obviously a difference or differentiation between the shamayim, the heavens, and the water we have on earth. In other words, there are 3 waters. There's water above the rakia, which means above shamayim, whatever that means. There's water in Shamayim, or below Shamayim, but that doesn't mean all the way down to earth. And then there is a 3rd level, which is the water we have in this world. So how are all these things not just falling to the ground, right? What happened to gravity? And the answer is, left to their own devices, it would all fall down. But Hashem is like the master puppeteer. He's holding them up. So what does all that mean? I'm not sure. I don't know. I don't know if I really could understand that. But one thing that you see for sure from this Rashi is that this notion is there was something physical happening. Something was solidified. Something was differentiated. We may not have access to it. We may not know what it is. But something in the physical world changed then. If you look at the first source on your sheet, Ramban, so he quotes Rashi. He quotes the Rashi. Rashi really, the source is in the Medrash Rabbah. And the Ramban quotes it. But then if you look at the third line, where I have it underlined, says the Ramban, not so fast. V'zeh me'inyan ma'isa b'reishis. And really, that could have been in quotes. This is from the quote, ma'isa b'reishis. And what's going on here is very, very mysterious. V'al tikva mimeni she'echtov bodavar. And don't you, the reader, have any hopes, don't have any expectations that I'm going to write for you and tell you what actually is going on. Sha'inyan hu me'sisrei ha'Torah. Because what's going on here is from the deepest, deepest, most profound secrets of the Torah. V'ein ha'psukim tzrichim l'biur zeh. And in order... Ellie, you have something on your head? You had a tissue on your head, which just fell. And these psukim, it's like mamonoshach. If you're just going to take the superficial reading of the psukim, and I'm going to start kvetching, what do the psukim mean? So that's not going to help you anyway. That's got nothing to do with these mysteries. There's no point, says the Ramban, in me trying to explain to you the details and the nuances, which again, the Ramban is famous for throughout Torah, is trying to figure out the nuances of the text. He's the classic exegete. Says the Ramban, there's no point in doing it for these psukim, because they're really all, if you will, just clouding this mystery that's behind it. And therefore, kilo yarech ha-kasav binyano. In three psukim, you can't imagine, the very fact that it's all it is three psukim, shows you that obviously the Torah is keeping something very hidden. Because you could not possibly describe, even if it's conceivable to describe, but it couldn't have been done in three short psukim to tell us what's going on here. The fact that it's written, so bekitzer, must mean that really it's just giving us like code, but there's something deeply hidden. And in fact, says the Ramban in conclusion, v'haperush, and then actually the real meaning, what's going on here? Usur liyodav, who said you're even allowed to know? Who said you're allowed to know? That's for anyone, v'kol shekein elenu, let alone simpletons for us. In other words, this is the stuff that's reserved for the greatest geniuses, the greatest mystics, the greatest tzaddikim. Somehow they may have access. And it's not even clear that Ramban means in his own day. It could be that he meant in Chazal or beyond or before. But in even his day, says Ramban, this is stuff that is beyond us. In other words, not that we actually understood what was going on in Rashi. It's almost like a 1-2 punch. When you just read Rashi, you could almost be like, that's it? Now I'm supposed to understand what's going on? You could be very deflated, frankly. So then you read the Ramban and you realize, oh, it's okay that you don't know what's going on. You weren't supposed to know. That's first aim number one in sharing this with you. There's a lot of secretive stuff going on. You shouldn't think, I've told you this more than once, and it'll probably be a recurring theme, you shouldn't think that when we study, even with all the in-depth and the sources that we're doing, you shouldn't think that when we finish all this, oh, now I know what happened. You'll know more than you did, I hope, before the year started. But you're not going to all of a sudden have any understanding. It's simply hidden from us. That's point number one, and you don't have to be frustrated by that. Number two is, though, just as a piezo, to the extent that we can know what was being hinted at, there does seem to be a debate between Rashi and Ramban. Ramban is clearly stressing that what was being described here is something more spiritual. Whereas the Rashi, based on Chazal and the Medrash, seem to be describing something a little bit more of a physical phenomenon. But as I say, it's not that we all of a sudden understand the physical phenomenon. What is the rain, the water, that we'll see when if we have a chance, I hope, to God willing, at the end of the Shira, a Rambam Amar Nevuchim, he writes, you know, if you take these psukim literally, you're a fool. There's no water up there. There's no water above the heavens. It's not like you have to, you know, this is a classic Rambam. You don't have to take it on faith that it's there, says the Rambam. It's not there. We don't know what it means. Obviously, it means something. We believe in the Torah, of course. But we don't know what this stuff means. This is, that Rambam, which we will see, hopefully, and the Ramban here, are very much hand in hand. There's something secretive and mysterious going on, and in a classically sharp way, the Ramban says, and therefore, don't ask me, because I'm not going to tell you. Yes?
Rabbi, what's strange about this Ramban is the use of the word Usur. Now, we think in terms of the context of Usur, that means, you know,
he may mean that.
I never heard of a situation where somebody is going to look at a pasuk.
I'll tell you why, but I'll tell you, I didn't put it on the sheet. Maybe I should have, or maybe there will be another opportunity to do so in a different context. There's a Gemara Masechta Chagiga, which a very famous Gemara. Your days, your Dalad. I think your Dalad. It's one of those two. The Gemara there says, and this is where the term Maaseh Bereishis comes from, that it's usher to teach in public. Usher to teach Maaseh Bereishis. The Gemara... Oh, exactly! Right! The answer is, I don't know. The Rambam tries to understand what that means. The Gemara there distinguishes between two famous mystical tracts, the Maaseh Bereishis and the Maaseh Merkava. The famous the prophecy of Yechezkel, where he sees this incredibly elaborate chariot somehow symbolizing God. Incredibly deep mysteries. So the upshot is, the Gemara did not mean to say that every school, right, may Aleph Atav, may Yemin at Smol, America, Europe, and Israel, can't teach their first graders what it's teaching them, right? All the first graders are doing this. My daughter, every time she wants to look at the sheet, she's davening up to Psukim, Yamar Hashem, and Hashem said, so is that also she's learning my Bereishis? The answer is no, because obviously, clued into this Ramban, it's the mysteries of Bereishis. If someone would know them, the Gemara is saying you're not supposed to teach them. Not all knowledge is good. That is a principle that people have been debating for years, but it's clear where Judaism stands on this. Not all knowledge is for all people. There is such a thing as a little bit of knowledge being very dangerous. And Gemara is very clear about that. Understanding. No, he means understanding what it means. That's the deeper level, not just reading the words. Right, yes.
He quotes Rashi. Sure, Rashi is very hot. That what he brings. He brings from a Midrash. It's like three kind of words. But they are, I think it's very dark. However, one was a Spaniard, the rational.
Yeah, he quotes from the Ibn Ezra, yeah.
He says that it was very, it was not complicated. The Hainu, the Ribbono Shel Olam, he blew in the water, thinned it. Rakia means to thin. You had by the Kuipachim.
Thin, yeah.
You had in Korah. To thin. He thins the water. How did he thin it?
Like a blood thinner.
Air. That's the CO2 what you have. It got so thin, then it turned to our air what we have, which consists of water.
Okay.
Yeah. That is it. We made the water up to the clouds, and under it, that's the ocean. That's
okay.
The space.
Right. Good. But I'll tell you the truth, I don't know exactly what that means either. In other words, how did that happen? Hashem blowing water that existed and thinning it? Okay, my point is, I'm saying, all of this is mysterious. There's no question about it. I want to mention one more thing, one more introductory thing before we get to the main topic that I want to discuss tonight, which is in Pasuk Zayin. So here we have an example of the verb form of Vayas, and God did. Vayas Elokim Asarakia, and God did. God made the Rakia. Now, we have seen, until now, we have a line of bara, creation. We've seen the language of Amira, Vayomer, and now we have Vayas. So look at the Ramban on your sheet, the second Ramban, a one-liner. Lashon Asiya B'chol Makom, whenever the Chumash uses the term, or some form of the word Asiya, Tikun HaDavar Almat Chunaso. It's a way of saying, essentially, that the particular item has been perfected or totally refined based on its properties. It's been totally taken to its, what should be its logical conclusion. Now, I mention this to you in particular because, if you'll remember, to our second class together, this is a Ramban Lashitaso. The Ramban on Pasuk Aleph, it's on your second source sheet, if you've been keeping the sheets, you remember that when we learned about the Bereishis Bara, what happened right then, that Ramban who describes this special matter, what he calls Yuli matter, that the world was created with, that's what when the Torah says Shemayim Aretz, it doesn't mean actual heaven and earth, it means this primordial matter. What was the kunst of this matter, said the Ramban? That it contained all of the potential, everything that would be created in the Shemayim, the solar system, the galaxies, all of that, it was in potential in this thing that was called Shemayim, that matter. And anything that would be in the earth, everything, that was in what was in this potential matter, this matter which contained the potential R of that called Aretz. That notion of putting the potential in something, said the Ramban there, that is a language of Bria. It's creating that potential. And the Ramban there, working together with here, Bria or any Lashon Avara is creating the potential, is putting in the koach, and to be motzi, the koach lapoel, of making that into actual, turning that, that is vayas. So the potential was already created in day one. Comes along the Rabbah, says, vayas elokim asarakia. Oh, here you have an example where Hashem took this matter that was in potential, and He gave it a form called Rakia. Now, we may not understand exactly what the Rakia is, but the point is that's already a form, and that was taking something that had been in potential and taking it for what its purpose was. Its purpose was that. Okay. Sure. Right, it seems to be, right, it exists, right, yes, there's a Rashi, again, we haven't done everything together, I forget exactly which pasuk it's on, but there's a Rashi that basically states that the opening of creation was a dividing between waters. In other words, it sounds like from that Rashi, it's a little bit tricky, and I'm saving it for perhaps a shiur at the end of the whole 6 days of Bereishis, if anyone will hopefully with God's help get there, where I promise you that I would, to the best of my ability, try to discuss some of the issues with science and Torah. So I wanted to get back to that Rashi. But there is a Rashi that does seem to say, and I would never have said this on my own, and I don't know exactly what it means anyway, but it sounds like there was some kind of predating the creation that we're talking about, there existed already some water. Some matter, something that's being called Mayim, and that is what is... If I have a chance after the shiur, if not, Leonetter, I'll try for the future. I'll tell you specifically which Rashi. I mean, you could try to find it yourself. It's only one of the first four or five sukkim. I don't remember exactly which pasuk it is, but there is a Rashi that does say that, and it's exactly your point. It's a point well taken. Now I want to get to the main thrust of tonight's shiur, which I think it's one question, which has, to the best that I was able to count, six or seven answers. Each answer is interesting, and at least two or three of them, I think, are very profound. Certainly from a hashkafic perspective. What do you notice is different or absent, one or another, in the Torah's description of what happened on day two? And I'll give you a hint if you look at the title of the shiur. We just very quickly addressed the first half of the title of today's shiur. What happened? I don't know! You asked me the question, that's the title of the shiur. What happened on day two? I don't know! Rashi says it was something physical, Ramban says something is spiritual, but one thing we know, we don't understand. Okay, that's what happened. Yes. Oh, nowhere when it comes to day two does it say that Hashem was happy with what He did. It doesn't say Kitov. What does it say? What does it say? No, before that though, what does it say instead? Vayichain. Doesn't say Vayichito. And it was. You know, can you imagine? Take a classic example, right? You go out on a date, and you come back, and your friends ask you, how was it? It was. So, we all know what that means. You're a tzaddik and don't want to say anything not nice. It was. So, how was he? What kind of guy was he? What kind of girl was she? A guy. You want me to tell you shlub? No, but it was. That's very different than come back and saying, Vayito, it was great. Now, if you look, I mean, you're probably familiar, but we could look at every other day, Hashem says Tov. We'll get to the fact that this one day says Tov Ma'od. We have three categories, right? We have good, very good, and it was. I guess better than bad, right? We've all had dates like that too. Wasn't bad. He was. Right? That's, he was, is we're not sure if we're going to give him a second date. That's he was. He was. But again, the kind of question is, you know, by now obvious. Why? What other things? It doesn't say keto. But again, it says V'Hikain there, good. But at the end of day four, it says Pasuk Yud Ches V'Yar Elokim Ki Tov. There's nowhere in day two that it says Ki Tov.
Right. I'm saying, just having it say, it's not
Okay, so they're not exclusive. Good. So the question still remains. What was it about day two that did not merit it was good?
Well, it's also missing on day five.
You sure? Yes, at the end of Pasuk Chaf Aleph. At the end of Pasuk Chaf Aleph. Vayar Elokim Ki Tov.
Oh, before that.
We'll take each day as it comes. Chaf is already a different pasuk. Is a different. Chaf is day six. We'll take each day as it comes, how it's addressed. Right now, we just want to point out that in every other day it says Ki Tov. Here it does not say Ki Tov. So those are the facts that I've introduced into evidence. Does anyone object to those facts? Oh, okay, fine. So now our question is, so what about day two, or if you prefer, what about the actions of day two, did not merit a Ki Tov? Well, okay, we'll have to see. I think we have seven answers. Your answer is going to be the first one we're going to discuss. Yes? Good. That'll be answer number three. Good. I gave you seven chances. Yes, Sarah, you had the answer? Good. That's answer three.
I'm not sure that Hashem is commenting on his own actions, quote unquote, by saying he's so, as opposed to the result. In the Torah, he saw that the Torah was good. The result, not, you know, that was.
Okay, so now, just so reframe the question. It doesn't answer the question, right?
Well,
so why wasn't the result of day two good?
Rokia may not be a total result.
Okay, so that's hinting at what Dr. Felsenthal said. That's not what Dr. Felsenthal said. He said it wasn't complete. Are you sure you don't want to stay with Dr. Felsenthal?
It's an admirable person to stay with.
Okay.
But that doesn't answer your question.
No. So let's see. Let's see Rashi. We'll start off with Rashi. It's always a good place to start. Pasuk Zion. In the second Dibur HaMaskil Me'al L'Rakia, after the parentheses, everyone see it after the period, U'mipnei Ma'lo Nemar Ki Tov B'Yom Sheni, asks Rashi. How come it doesn't say on the second day that it was Ki Tov? So Rashi, quoting from one opinion in the Medrash, is Mechaven to Dr. Felsenthal. L'Pishelo Hayin Nigmar Meleches Hamayim Ad Yom Shlishi. Because in fact, the whole process of creating water wasn't completed until the third day. It only started, the process started on the second day. Nigmar, vitovo. And if it's incomplete, then it's not in its full luster and with all of its full benefits. It was only completed on the third day, and therefore, Bashlishi, in fact, on the third day, Shenigmar Melechas Hamayim, when the water is finally completed, Vehizchil Vagomer Melech Acheres, other things are also created on day three, Kefil Bo Ki Tov Shnei Pamim. If you look, we'll see in a moment, in the description of day three, Ki Tov is mentioned two times. Echad Ligmar Melechas Hasheni, the first time, indicating the final completion of what it was started on day two, the Echad Ligmar Melechas Hayom. And the second time it says Ki Tov, to refer to the completion of what is actually going to be completed on day three. So take a look up to the Chumash, it's only a few psukim. Day three is psukim Tes through Yud Gimel. What happens there? Yomar Elokim, Pasuk Tes, Yikovu Hamayim, Mitachas HaShamayim, the waters that are beneath Shamayim. And I'll just point out very superficially, but this may be a good proof for what Rashi described, or Rashi identified the waters below the Rakia as Shamayim. And then Rashi has said, and then there's this third level, the water on the earth. So then it works perfectly. So now comes Pasuk Tes and said, the water that's below the Shamayim, i.e. the water that's now Hashem separates it. He gathers that into one area, Al-Makom Echad. And what does that make room for? It makes room for the fact that now we can have dry land. Eretz, and that dry land is called Eretz. Karayamim. And this water is called the seas. That's the great seas in the world. And now, Vayar Elokim Kitov, says Rashi, this Kitov is going back on what was started. It was a process. That water was so complicated in all the spheres of the universe that it was created at first on day two, but only completed on day three, and that's why it says Kitov here. Then the pasuk continues, Mr. Shem, we'll see this in future Shurim. Tache Aretz Deshe. Now we're going to have the growth in the land, in the earth. And then finally it says at the end of pasuk Yudbeis, after the trees and all that stuff was created, Re'alukim Kitov. Two Kitovs for two different things. The second Kitov for what was actually day three's mission, if you will, and the first Kitov for the completion of what was started on day. So just like if you ask your child to do an errand, and they come to you in the mid and say, look, you know, my children all the time, I cleaned up the basement. And they're looking for, like, you know, positive reinforcement, a candy, a hug, a kiss. And then you look downstairs. Now I don't even need to look. I know the first time they tell me it's finished, maybe half of it's done. Right? So do you give them the keto then? It's not done yet. Ah, you started. Good. Good boy, you started. But you don't get the lolly until you finish. You don't get the story before bedtime until you finish. So that's what Rashi says. The water process was started on day two, but since it wasn't finished, it didn't merit a kitov. Only when the process finally concluded on day three is there a kitov. And that is, in fact, again, Rashi, as it often is quoting you one of the opinions in a medrash. Now, the truth is, if you turn over to the back, to the second side of your sheet, I want to see half of Rabbeinu Bachai. Rabbeinu Bachai here is remarkable. It's a fantastic, fantastic source. And we'll see him making two different points. But the first is his analysis of this opinion of Rashi in the Medrash. So he starts off by quoting it. And then, you see in the middle of the first line, Ani shoel bazeh. I don't take that so simply, he says. Who cares? What's the big deal that the mayim wasn't completed on the second day? Kaven shenigmara meleches harakia. But the rakia, whatever that means, that firmament that divided the waters on high from the waters on low, the rakia is a creation, and the rakia was completed. Furthermore, he says, interestingly, ubriyas hamalachim. The angels were created. Right? You ever wonder when were the angels created? It's not anywhere in the Chumash. So he said, we'll get to it in a second, says the Rabbeinu Bachai, it's not just the Rakia. You'll say, what do I need a Rakia for? It's no big deal to me. We all need angels. Angels were created on day two. Isn't that worthy about saying Kitov? So keep your finger there for a moment and look. Turn over the page. Well, you can't really do that then. Okay, it's Twister. It's a game of Twister. Okay. Look at the bottom of the page. The bottom of the page, Bereishis Rabbah, Perek Aleph, Parsha Aleph, Siman Gimel. Amosai, the Medrash asks, Nivru Malachim. Right, if there are angels, they had to have been created. And so it doesn't tell us explicitly in the Chumash. We need the Chazal to figure out, when were the angels created? So there's a two-way opinion, a debate. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Bebeiz Nivru HaMalachim. That's the opinion that Rabbeinu Bachai assumes is correct. Gives the whole drusha, not based on any psukim in the Chumash, but based on a passing in Tehillim, to support that view. Rabbi Chanina Omar, no. Behei, not on Monday, on Thursday, on the fifth day of creation, the angels were created. Now, it's worth noting, as the Medrash itself continues, Kol Amodim Shlo Nivra B'yom Rishon Klum. But one thing is for sure, the Medrash says a very important theological point. The angels were not created on day one. Now, whether they're created on day two or day five, not a big deal. That, even according to the Medrash, doesn't seem... My nafkamina, I don't know. Maybe there is none. Different ways to darshan psukim from Tehillim. But the Medrash says it is a big deal to know that everyone agrees whether it's two and five are not one. The angels were not created on day one. Now, why do you think it's so important to the Medrash? I'm giving you a hint. It's a theological reason that the angels were not created on day one. What do you think?
Some
He's saying the same thing. Is that what you want to say also? You don't want to say that. Right, you're all saying the same thing. The Medrash continues exactly what you're saying. Shelo yomru Michael hayo mutach. In other words, you shouldn't say that Michael was on one side and Gabriel, another angel, was on the other side and Hashem was in the middle, and it's like a team effort. They created the world. You know, Hashem, you know, you want to have a project, you need to have a foreman and you need to have a project manager. So Hashem did that in the beginning, and now we're ready. Right, a building chair and a campaign chair and a fundraising chair. You need all the people, and now you have Gabriel and this one, and now we're ready to go. Chas v'shalom. Chas v'shalom. So whatever it is, says the Medrash, this is just a PS to tonight's year, but it's an important PS. The angels were not created on day one. And they may even have been created on day two, or maybe it's day five. So turn back over your page. So Rabbi Bachai says it's created on day two. And even if you don't think it was created on day two, the Rakia was created on day two. So no. The Rakia is chopped liver? What happened to the Malachim? They shouldn't get a Kitov? So he answers a very profound, philosophical, hashkafic idea. You can't over-exaggerate how important what Rabbeinu Bachai is going to tell us right now. V'yesh li lomar, says Rabbeinu Bachai, shemikan raya atzuma. From here we have a strong proof. Ki ha'olam hashafel, bizman sheYisrael osin ratzono shel makom. This world, a world which is compared to the upper worlds and Shemayim, the lower world, the lowest world. But this world, when we're doing the right thing in this world, who ikar hametzius? Don't think that it's all, the ikar is Shemayim, the ikar is heaven, the ikar is the next world. That's other religions. It's all about getting to heaven. Says Rabbeinu Bachai, the ikar metzius, the ikar existence, the primary existence of all the worlds that Hashem has created, is this world, even though it's inherently the lowest form. Because even though the Rakia, which we don't know where it is, but we know it's high, high up, and the angels, we don't know where they are, but they're high, high up. So they were created, but new, what? They are chopped liver, because all they are is in the higher worlds, the Olamim Halyonim. Lo haya bazeh shlemus. But there's no real completion, significance. In fact, until you get to the third day, because only then, when Hashem separates the water, what does that reveal? That reveals the dry earth, the land. Because before that, the whole world was water. And it was only then, when it says Yikavu, and it's Pasei Olam Elyon. The whole purpose of the world, the ikar of all the things Hashem created, and this is clearly from what the Rabbeinu Bachai is driving at, it's this world, and specifically, that people should live the right way in this world. As he says, Bezman, thank you. Bezman she'osin Yisrael ritzon rishon makom. The highest goal, human beings, Jewish people, following the Torah, that's the highest goal. The angels, and right, we say this like in, you know, in the Piyutim, on Roshonim, Yom Kippur, and in Kedusha, you know, Kadosh, 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 and the Srafim, and the, all the angelic things, it's all nice. But none of that is important as one person doing an act of chesed in this world. One person learning Torah in this world. This is the ikar. And therefore, so you created the Rekia, and you created the Malachim, that doesn't get you a Kitov. Big deal. Oh, day three, when the water is separated, it's still not the water itself, says Rabbeinu Bachai, to get the Kitov. It's by separating the water that allows for something else. Dry earth. Right? I remember, not to be too lighthearted about this, but I remember at one of the theme parks, I think in California, the Universal Studios, I think it was, when we went with our family, so they have a whole thing called Water World, which is based on a movie that I understand is one of the most expensive and least profitable movies of all time. That they didn't tell us at Universal Studios. I did a little background reading. And it was all about this world where there were great floods, I guess. I don't know. Maybe the polar ice cap melted. But there are certain apocalyptic people are always worried that any moment the whole ice cap is going to melt. So apparently that was the premise. And the whole thing was water. So the whole show, what we saw in California, was somehow they were going to live on water. It was very fun and entertaining. But the point is, it's not a natural way for people to live. So Rabbeinu Bachai understood that. He said, that's the point. Until you created dry land, there wasn't yet potential for there to be human beings. And in that, until that happened, the world was not Kitov. Because what's the point? Only once you separate the waters and allow for dry land, then you don't have a water world anymore. then you have a dry land world. And a dry land world can allow for human beings, and human beings, that's Kitov. That we should remember and remind ourselves, a medrash which was a little bit perplexing, some of you asked good questions on it, but we don't always have the answers, but we can still have an antenna to know what Chazal or Rishon teaching us something profound. You'll remember that one of the things we had about creation was said that Hashem wasn't sure if it was going to be a good thing or a bad thing, because Hashem looked out at the future, he saw the tzaddikim, he says, good, I'm going to create the world. And then he says, oi, look at the Rishayim they're going to be. He wasn't sure if he's going to create the world. The Medrash says, well, he needed din, he needed rachamim. It's a very, very, so to me, in light of that, the Rabban Bachai is very beautiful in the sense of, even though Hashem knows that by creating this Yikavu Hamayim and having not a water world but a land world, and it'll give potential for human beings, and not the human beings will not always do the right thing. Human beings will not always do the right thing. There'll be Rishayim that'll come out of it. Right? We gave the example then. Hashem looks at Adam and he sees a Chavetz Chaim who wants to create the world. Then Hashem looks at Adam and he sees Hitler. Yimach Shemo. He doesn't want to create the world. And nevertheless, the potential for both, says Rabbi Bachai, it's only then that it's Kitov. Despite the chances that not everyone's going to live up to what Hashem wants, despite the chances that lots of bad is going to happen in the world, there's no potential for good without human beings. Nebuch, part of the deal is that there has to be the potential for evil too. But there's no potential for good without human beings, and there can't be any human beings until Yikavu Hamayim. And therefore, says Rabbi Bachai, that's why it's not Kitov in the second day. I think that is incredibly important. Whether it's the best shot in the Chumash, I don't know. But as a piece of Hashkafa to walk away from, very, very important. Okay, turn over your sheet again. No, the Rakia, the other things were created. You mean why was it an interim step? Well, okay, that's not a question on Rabbeinu Bachai per se, right? That could be a question on Rashi.
I
don't know. Good question. Why, the way I would put the question, so why does Hashem have divided up into two steps?
Especially they look at it.
They have something else going on anyway. Related at all, presumably. Unless you see the focus, as Rabbeinu Bachai did, that what happens on day three is not the completion of water, but by completing water, you've allowed for dry land. Because dry land is obviously created related to what's going to grow from it. But I think the question is still a good one. I don't have an answer. I don't know.
It seems like a mere natural split would be...
Yes, exactly. To keep those two psukim into day two.
End with the earth and the water.
Good question. Good question. Good question. Good question. But there are other answers, so... I told you, we have four or five other answers still to do. So this Rashi that we started with, that has this process which Rabbeinu Bachai asked on, Rabbeinu Bachai gives his variation of it, but the Rashi himself acknowledged he was just borrowing, cutting, and pasting from the Medrash. So let's see the Medrash inside, because not only will we see that the answer of the Medrash gives three or four other answers, each one very fascinating and important. So after quoting the answer that Rashi gives, then the Medrash gives a second answer. The name of Yossi Rav Chalafta, Shabo Nivres, Gehenna. The G word. Gehenna. Gehenna was created on day two, says the Medrash. How does it know it? A complicated drasha, I don't want to get into it. A complicated drasha, based on Pesukim in Yeshaya. Not from the Chumash. You don't get this from the Chumash. The Medrash understands from a complicated Pesukim in Yeshaya and the Navi, that Gehenna was created in day two. Now, what is Gehenna? Good question. I don't know. Is that really a place called Gehenna? I don't know. Right, I'm not talking about the valley. With the, I thought you were going to say that each sect is the other place. That's Gehenna. Go to that yeshiva, you're in Gehenna. Huh? And it's not referring to my ninth grade Rebbe either in that year, although it felt like we were there. That's a second. And the bottom line is, one of the interesting things, again, I'm not questioning because I don't really understand it, I'm just sharing it with you, but one of the interesting things that very often you will see as often attributed as one of the differences between Christianity and Judaism is whether we believe in hell as a place. Right? Christians very much do. Right? We have all the graphic images in our mind with the red guy and... Right, and every now and then, I've read different exchanges or something where this Christian person will tell the Jewish person, you know, you're going to hell. And the Jewish person gets a little smile and says, we don't believe in hell. Now, it's glib and it's nice, but I don't know. The Medrash seems to describe something being created called Gehenim. Yes?
See, the Bali Musa say that the Gehenim is...
Same place.
Old Nasha.
Yeah.
That the person will understand what he could have arrived.
Right, right.
And he neglected it for... Next hundred, you can never fix it.
There's a lot of explanations. There's others. I'm not questioning it, but this medrash does imply that it is.
That's true.
This medrash does. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm pointing out.
Yeah.
But that's one. Now we have answer number two. Right? Either that there's an incompletion with the water, or this answer is a completely irrelevant one. No, water's done. That's fine. It's just that if Gehenim is created. You can't say that on a day where Gehenim is created, you know, you come home from work, you know, my wife always asks me, do you have a good day? Sure, I just created Gehenim. I wouldn't be so nice. You know, yeah, maybe you did accomplish something, but you wouldn't say it's a good day at the office. That's answer number two from the Medrash. The Medrash continues. I'm Rav Tivyumi. Did I skip something? Yes, I did, thank you. At the end of the second line, Rabbi Chanina Omer, Shebo Nivreis Machlokes. This is what a few of you said as well. Oh, the whole notion of the insidious phenomenon, which is right, part of human history throughout to the very day, Hokan Machlokes, was introduced into the world. You thought it was an Ottoman Chava were arguing, even before them. Day two. That's when it was created. Shenemar, Vayihi Mavdil Bein Mayim L'Mayim. The very act of distinguishing between the two different waters created the potential for machlokes. Amar Rav Tivyumi, this is incredible musr here, incredible musr. Im machlokes shehila tikuno shel olam v'li yeshuvo. Right? There couldn't have been a world, apparently, not that we understand what happened, but apparently there could not have been a world unless God had separated those waters. And even about such an act, which allowed for the whole creation of the rest of the world, but still, it was some act of divisiveness. And about that, Ein Ba Ki Tov, we can't say it was good. Machlokas Shihi, there Bubo. Right, Machlokas was just us to cause trouble, to be a troublemaker, to create period among people. Al Achas Kama Vakama. Ooh, wow. Could you imagine how horrible Machlokas is? So I want to turn back now to the Rabbeinu Bachai. He accepts this answer, but he elaborates on it in a way which I think is a very important musr for us. Very important musr. Yes? Yavdil, correct. I think that's exactly what you said. Look at this Rabbeinu Bachai. So he had already quoted the answer of the process wasn't created yet, finished until day three. He gave his shot on that. Middle of the paragraph, after the three dots, the ode. Another answer, Darshu, Chazal. Oh, because there was Machlokas. So then he goes to town on the concept of Machlokas. And this is not, we're moving beyond Pshat and Chumash, right? If you notice the title of the series, A Study of Text, Tradition, and Theology. Right? The shir is not just about text. It's not just about pshat. And we're definitely beyond pshat here. But what does Rabbeinu Bachai say? It's important. Ubir inyan ki hasheni chilat hashinui. Once you get to two, then you're already on the thin part of the ice, so to speak. You're in a precarious position because you're already involved in differentiation. In fact, lekach nikra sheni, says Rabbeinu Bachai, the etymology for the fact that the word sheni means two, relates to the word shinui, differentiation. Because when you have one, you only have one. Once you have two, you're differentiating. Vahu siba l'kol chaluka v'shinui. This is inherent in this differentiation, is all subsequent differentiations, chaluka, shinui, changes. Umash amru kimach lokes. Now he ties it together. Umash amru kimach lokes v'gehenim nivru bo bayom. Two different opinions in the Medrash. One said it's Gehenim that's created on day two. Now this other opinion says it's machlokes. Says Rabbeinu Bachai, it's not a machlokes. That's not a machlokes. Exactly. Right? When you're in machlokes, you're in a living hell. Ask anyone who's been in a machlokes. It's horrible. It's absolutely horrible. L'hisbonein mizeh. The Rabbi Bechai looks at it more as a punishment. Shekol ha-ma'orer machlokes nidon v'gehenim. Could you imagine? We all know people like this. And some of them, not all of them, some of them are ice dwarfs in their whole life. But what's more profound to me, that there are some people who are otherwise, they come to Minyan and they daven and they give tzedakah and they do all sorts of other mitzvahs. But they're mamish, they're bali machlokes. They're troublemakers. A bal machlokes is nidun l'gehenim. Unbelievable. I would add what I referred to before, which is that you don't have to wait until Achramei of Esrim to get there. People who are involved in machlokes, it's mamish, it ruins their life. It ruins their life. Right? We don't have a recording, but for those who may recall, this was part of my drasha, my last Shabbat Shuvah drasha. It was all about machlokes. This is the second part of the drasha. I didn't know about this Rabbi Bechai then, or you better be at it, would have been on the sheet. Okay, we live and we learn.
So the word nidon doesn't have to be you're getting a din.
Right, okay.
This is the actual
thing. I agree with you. I'm just not sure that's what he's saying. But I don't think he'd disagree with us. I think it's 100% true. You're absolutely correct. V'kevon shemach lokes v'gehenim nivru bo b'yom l'madnu shehu yom mazik. V'chein asru chazal. Again, it's a very long piece. I abbreviated it. But he quotes a number of different opinions in chazal. For example, you're not supposed to, because chazal says you shouldn't start a job on Tuesday. On a Monday, on Yom Sheni. You shouldn't start the exam on Yom Sheni. There's another weird Gemara in Masechta Pesachim that says you shouldn't eat things in pairs. The Zugos Gemara. You shouldn't do anything in pairs. Right? Because anything that's related to two somehow smacks of it, has a little bit of a schmeck of this idea of Sheni, is Shinui, is Pirut, is Machloikis. It's terrible. In fact, if you look, keep your finger there, look at the next source, scary Gemara. Don't ask me exactly what this means for those of you who were born on Monday. We'll talk about that another time. Gemara Shabbos says, Hai man de betray b'shaba, someone who's born on the second day of the week on Monday, Yehei geber ragzan. It's going to be an angry, difficult person. Mai taima, yishem de iflugu be maya. Because this is the day that the waters were separated. Just like, so to speak, akin to what Greg had said, the waters were supposed to be separated from themselves. So a person like this, in fact, the way Rashi says that, I'm saying that the person is internally ill at ease. Rashi says you're separated from other people. You're a ragzin, you can't get along with people. So there's a real notion, you know, so to speak, there's a strain of thought that sees this second day, you know, like embedded with these noxious negative forces which have ramifications throughout history.
You can't be a farce and there's otherwise shakhonim.
And that's such a functional part of our society already. Wouldn't want to break up the shadchan business. Okay, shadchanus and shaduchim, that's all working so well already. Sharei. Furthermore, says the Rebbeinu Bechai. Furthermore, if that's the case, v'hamachlokes hazeh shebiyom sheni hayetchilas kamachlokes v'sibasa. The source of all machlokes in the world and even in the rest of creation, everything comes from what happened on day two. Kachla nemar kitov. Shugorim hagormim acharov. Everything that happened afterwards comes from it. Umimena v'hala hayachokim ha'mashanim ratzan Hashem Yisbarach. In the rest of creation, you have people, or I shouldn't say people, phenomenon, existence, creations, which are not exactly keeping to what Hashem said. They're being a little bit troublemakerish. They're being a little bit rebellious. So, b'yom shlishi. Right, well, Emir Hashem learned about this, right? Hashem wanted to create an eighth oseh, a pre-oseh pre. But it didn't happen. Right, the trees rebelled against God. Yeah. And in the fourth day, and in the fifth day, in the fourth day, you have the machlokas between the moon and the sun. The moon says, I want to be king. Right? And that's when Hashem slices the moon. We don't know that medrash. And in the fifth day, he talks about something even more esoteric, this super-duper fish called the Leviathan. And there was a male and a female, and one was hidden, and one was shechted. Oh. And then on day six, there's Adam and Chava, and all the tumult there. Says Rabbeinu Bechai, it all comes from this on day two. The potential for all of that did not exist on day one. It only came into being on day two. And he concludes, Im kein matzinu, b'chol yomim achar, yom sheni, inin kitrug, v'shinoi kavana upirid v'ratzon. It's like throwing in every negative word he could find. Arguments, separation, rebelliousness, fighting, v'chiluk das, v'nevroim, everything. What's the reason for it all? V'sivasam, yom sheni, ki kulam ba'u kocho v'nevsham achar. The power, the potential for all of these bad things was created on day two. Well, now it's like, it even made it into creation. Like, we started off saying, how come it didn't get a ketov? Well, you know now. This is called overkill, perhaps. So again, here, I'm not going to try to convince you that the Ben Abachai is Pshat and Chumash. But as I say, the hashkafa behind it is certainly true. There is simply, I once read somewhere, I can't remember who, one of the Chassidish Rebbes said, better a false peace than a true machlokas. There is simply nothing worse than machlokas. It has to be avoided at all costs, even sometimes if you have to compromise other values. That's how, you don't need a better source than the Rebbe Nachman. Yeah.
Well, actually, I mean, you can't say generalize it if you have machlokas.
Right, good.
So, I mean, you know,
obviously, that's not being referred to here, obviously. Yeah. Right, the machlokas in this medrash about what the correct shot is.
Yeah.
Shani is Shani, and that's not good. It's the foundation of humanity, and it relates to husband and wife, which is two, which is the basic foundation of who we are.
Okay, we'll have to, it's a good question, but that, when we get to the creation of Adam and Chava, we'll do a little marriage hashkafa. We'll do a little marriage counseling in group form, group, huh? Right. First of all, they're supposed to become unified. Also, they were created as one. Right, but we'll get to that. We don't want to get ahead of ourselves, right? That'll be complicated enough. Okay, let's finish up. We have a few more minutes. I can't see what time it is.
Mr. Rabbi Machai answers Grace's question, because Rabbi Machai says it's based on the concept of shinui, not on the concept of havdalah.
Differentiation. Well, what do you mean by shinui then? Because it was one thing and then it was changed. That's what you mean by shinui?
Because shinui means shinui, not the idea of lahavdil.
But I'm saying, but are you just making a technical term?
This
differentiation? So you're saying essentially it is the same thing, but it's a technically different words. Okay. I thought that what he said was maybe a good word, which is that there you have an internal, you had one thing that's just divided. And that's maybe what shinoi means, shinoi chaining. Okay, let's just quickly finish up the medrash. There's actually two more things mentioned, one other thing mentioned in the medrash. Two more things, excuse me, and then if I can, I'll just tell you, so we will run out of time, I'll tell you the Rambam outside. But look back at the medrash. Medrash then quotes a third opinion, which is this opinion that we started with, actually, from Rashi, about how the water wasn't completed until the third day. Medrash tells a whole story where one member of Chazal had a different theory, but then this woman who met him, this matron, asked Shilas on the rabbi, and the rabbi was moded that she was right, and therefore he came back to the answer of the water being completed in two parts. And finally, we have two more answers in the Medrash. Look at the three lines up and four lines up from the bottom, the last one on the line. What's now a fourth answer we have? Somehow in the beginning of creation already, we have a hidden away in anticipation of Moshe. And Moshe, the pasuk says, I think it's Shmos Beis Beis, I'm not sure, you look it up, Moshe is described as Tov. Moshe is described as Tov. So we identify Tov with Moshe. But ultimately, Moshe is going to get his. Moshe is going to get punished. Mitachas yedehem, from their hands. Who's the there? Water. Because what did Moshe do? What's Moshe's big avera? He hit the rock and he didn't speak to it. So when he was trying to get water, that is what tripped up Moshe and brought him down. Fichach loksiv behem kitov. So now that we're creating water, right, all these years before there ever even a Moshe. But theologically, anything that could anyway sometime hurt Moshe Rabbeinu, that can't be called good. That's what this medrash says. And finally, in fact, the medrash then adds an interesting mashal. The medrash says, mashal amalash ayulo ligyon kasha. Right, a king who has a thug. Right? You need a thug to do your dirty work. But you make sure that he doesn't have your name in his wallet. That's, you know, that's, right? That's right. We look at the real world. We all see what's going on. Right? Certain difficult things have to be done, but the people who wear suits don't want to have to be associated with that. So that's exactly what the Medrash says. So the water was needed in the world. But because it had to do some dirty work later on in history with Moshe, Hashem, the king, doesn't want to be associated with, doesn't say Kito. And finally, you could have said that, but he saved him. Right? That would have been a good thing. But the fact is, at the end, it trips up Moshe. And Minamayim, right? Plus, right, Kriyas Yamsuf is the, right? But nevertheless, that one time is enough that it's not keto. Finally, the Medrash adds a final point, which is really drushy. Last thing the Medrash says, how could water be a good thing? It brought destruction to the world, right? You had the, before New Orleans, but you had the flood of the Mabul. That we know from Chumash. But then the Medrash adds two things which we don't know from Chumash, Dor Enosh, the generation of Enosh. There's another medrash that it's referencing that says they're Ovdei Avodah Zarah and Hashem drowned them too, somehow. Vador Haflago, we all know, right, the generation that built the Tower of Babel. So in the Chumash, it just says that Hashem separated them into different languages. But the Medrash says, no, they're also, they got dispersed and punished through water. Again, even though those were things that had to happen, Hashem himself did it. But because they were destructive acts, they couldn't be called Tov. And finally, if we look at the Rambam on the end of the page in the Mor Nevuchim, the Rambam, it's very much we're ending where we started, in the sense of where we started off with Ramban talking about how these waters above the firmament, below the firmament, what are they? We don't exactly know what they are. So it says the Rambam in his very typical fashion, again, if we had time I'd read it for you inside, but for now I'll just paraphrase. Rambam says, listen, if you read the Pesukim superficially, then you get nothing. Because as he says, there's no water above the heavens, there's no water, we don't know what he's... So it must mean, says the Rambam, that there's something much more mysterious going on here. So let's say we believe in whatever, that there's something more mysterious. But do we have access to it? Can we apprehend any benefit from this? It's not. It's the whole purpose is that it's mysterious and it's hidden. So therefore, says the Rambam, something that's so hidden from us, kito, you have to be real. This is another Musar. Even the Torah had to keep it real, to use some slang. You got to be honest with people. If you're going to say good job, it's got to really mean something. It can't be in the abstract. If the Torah was going to say that this water separating the Rakia, the high waters, the low waters, is good, so we, human beings, have to be able to apprehend some goodness from it. But the reality is that we don't know what it's talking about. So how can we feel that there was something good happening? We can trust that it was good, but we can't know it. And if we can't really know it, it doesn't work. Ki ein inyan atov elisha toalaso gluya v'nikeres v'metzius hanimsa v'kumal olam. Unless the good is tangible, that we in this real world can feel it, it can't be called good. Something that's hidden, so it's there, and it's hidden and we believe it's there, but since it's toelis, is not gluya livnei adam, it can't be tov. Six, I think we can
Lord Rambam and Rambam have
in that sense, yes, they all agree in this sense that this is, that's why I said, very mysterious, very mysterious. So, to summarize everything we did in one sentence, what happened on day two and was it good? We're not sure. And it might not have been. Okay, Emir Tashem, everyone should have a wonderful Hanukkah, and we'll see you back in 2 weeks.